Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From Mansour's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge, we're out to lunch with editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, Stephanie Regal. It's business, Baton Rouge style.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Regal. Welcome to Out to Lunch. As we were reminded during Hurricane Ida, Louisiana is home to critical infrastructure that serves not only the region, but the entire U.S. Ports and petrochemical plants line the Mississippi River from the Gulf past Baton Rouge, and they are vital assets that keep life humming along in this digital age. And that means they are increasingly interconnected and reliant on technology to function, which means they and we are vulnerable to threat from cyber attacks. With me today to discuss this is Jeff Moulton, President and CEO of Stevenson Technologies Corporation, a nonprofit applied research and development corporation that is owned by LSU and does cyber research and development and also provides cybersecurity services for clients in the federal government, commercial, and energy sectors. Jeff also is president and chairman of the Stevenson Stellar Corporation, which helps provide next-gen cybersecurity solutions for space systems, which means Jeff is doing a lot of cutting-edge and highly classified work for some really cool clients. Jeff has in-depth experience with the intelligence community's assessing and defining corporate-level and globally deployable network security solutions. He also participates in numerous national and international cyber forums. Jeff is a native of Pennsylvania who spent 24 years in the Air Force before moving into his career in cybersecurity. And Jeff, you are on the front lines of such an important field. Thank you so much for joining us on Out to Lunch.
Well, thanks for having me.
And for my data condom, which we can talk about in a minute. Joining me and Jeff at the table is Jay Hardiman, Executive Director of the Port of Greater Baton Rouge, which is located in Port Allen on the west side of the Mississippi River and sits at the junction of the Gulf Intercoastal Waterway at its northernmost point. The Port of Greater Baton Rouge is the eighth largest in the world in terms of annual tonnage, and it handles a variety of bulk and break bulk cargo for domestic and international markets in primarily agriculture, forestry, and the petrochem sectors. Jay has been with the port since 1999 and was named its executive director in 2006. In his years at the helm, he has overseen $45 million in infrastructure improvements and has been involved in enhancing port security measures and designing and developing new economic development projects there. Jay is a native of Covington and a graduate of LSU with a civil engineering degree. And Jay, it's a pleasure to have you here today and to finally meet you face-to-face because we talk on the phone a lot.
Stephanie, thanks for having us. Thanks for your interest in the port.
And I think there's a lot of nice overlap between what you all do, certainly in the world of cybersecurity and the port being such critical infrastructure and everything. But Jeff, start out by just sort of untangling your companies, the Stevenson companies, you know, Technology Corporation and the Stellar Space, you know, Corporation as well.
Sure. So STC is a wholly owned company by LSU. LSU was very interested in starting to penetrate and take advantage of some of the opportunities from a research perspective with the Defense Department, the federal sector, and the intelligence community. When I got down here about 7 years ago, Governor Jindal was very adamant that I move, and I did. So I moved down from Georgia Tech under his invitation, and then we started working with LSU trying to figure out how we would move that needle forward. LSU had some limiting factors that weren't conducive to working with the federal sector. So we started STC, Stevenson's Technology Corporation, to actually facilitate doing work with the federal government. And that was really the catalyst for that entire evolution. Now we're about 75 employees, close to $80 million in research-sponsored revenues, and we have a really brand-new, beautiful office down on the water campus downtown where we do a lot of our classified work.
Classified work, wow. That's pretty exciting. I guess people don't realize that's really going on right here. And Jay, just to bring you into the conversation, tell us how the port sort of fits into the port system of Southeast Louisiana.
Well, we're one of five deepwater ports on the Mississippi River. We're being the head of deepwater navigation in Baton Rouge, Plaquemines being down on the south end, St. Bernard, New Orleans, Port of South Louisiana in between. Our primary cargoes are petroleum products, bulk products, liquids, grains. Grown into the container business and repositioning empties and moving those down into New Orleans for export with product in them. Been able to take some trucks off the road, some air quality issues. Had a lot of interest in the recently that you're aware of in the green fuels. I've got a project we're trying to develop with Grand Fuels, a renewable diesel facility at the port that we feel is going to come through to fruition, be probably close to $500 million to $750 million worth of capital investment on port property for the facility.
And do all these five ports work together? Do you compete against each other?
Oh, absolutely. Compete against each other is just something that, you know, all the ports on the Mississippi River could say no fees, no port fees to any of our customers or clients this time. And we would not get any more cargo. Our fees are so nominal in the big scheme of things. Products and the people that come to the Port of New Orleans and Port of Baton Rouge is a huge economic landside incentive, whether it be truck, location, rail location, highway logistics, and bring those cargoes into those facilities in that regard. So we do work very well together. We've had security initiatives together. We're working now with New Orleans on these container moves because the boxes that we load here in Baton Rouge from our regional producers end up going to New Orleans for export.
And I want to talk about containers in a minute because that's so interesting. But Jeff, you do cybersecurity, cyber research, cyber defense for government clients and private sector clients. I mean, do y'all just span the gamut? What specifically, when we dig into cybersecurity a little bit, is Stevenson actually doing?
So
outside of the space thing, we'll get to the space thing in a minute.
Sure. So we do what we call full spectrum cybersecurity services. Basically, that's engineering cyber solutions. When we come into your operation, we'll take a look at how you do business, match your business processes to technology needs that you either current your architecture that you currently have, or you know if you're trying to expand or try to get better, trying to improve your business processes, how that integration of new technology into your current business model would work, what it would look like, how much money you want to invest, because you don't always need to buy the Cadillac. Sometimes the Volkswagen will get you to the same place. So we actually give clients back feedback. We don't endorse any project. We're a nonprofit, so I don't get in bed with any particular vendor. But we will tell you what we consider to be the most secure solution at the price point that you're willing to pay. So we do that mostly for the federal government. We'll develop prototypes and then turn those tech data packages back over to the client so they can take that tech data package and make an RFP to go out to industry for the actual purchase of that solution. So that's predominantly the business model. Working with LSU, which has really been a pleasure, is, you know, we have a basic fundamental, what we call our value proposition, is that universities take, you know, basically money and turn it into knowledge, where industry takes that knowledge and turns it into money. So we bridge that gap. We bridge that divide between those two different ends of the spectrum when it comes to research.
Yeah. So with our port, with our refineries, I mean, so much critical infrastructure here. How vulnerable are we? Because when we see like what happens with an Ida and it knocks out power for a couple of weeks and the whole world comes to a halt, cyber threat scares me to death.
It should, and I'm glad that it does. That's why I gave you the data condom. One of the things that we're finding more and more problematic is the evolution of what we can now call killware.
Wow.
Where that's, you know, it literally will terminate you. And that's happening more and more, and it's happening within our critical infrastructure. If you take a few months back in Florida where they tried to hack and almost did successfully hack the water treatment facility there.
Terrifying.
That would actually kill people and result in death. Some of the things that are happening right now to hospitals here in Louisiana and across the world, ransomware attacks that can actually have the effect of terminating someone's dialysis or terminating a heart transplant, or when they go to the doctor now, they do this from remote. They would actually radio frequency adjust your heart monitor inside your chest. But what if we could turn it off?
And why would somebody want to do that?
Why does anybody want to kill anybody?
I mean, there are easier ways than a
But there's perhaps, but there's also a little bit more, it makes it easier from the forensics investigator's perspective done if you have DNA there at the scene or if you have fingerprints. In the digital world, it's very difficult to have attribution. Mm-hmm. So you can be more anonymous and get away with it easier, at least in theory.
Amazing. What is the Port of Baton Rouge doing to protect against this? And does this kind of thing keep you up at night, or are you dealing with more logistics and supply chain concerns at the moment?
Definitely, probably more logistics and supply chains. We've spent a tremendous amount of money hardening the port facility over the years since 9/11. Almost anybody could have ridden into the port years ago. It's very difficult to get on. It's probably the same level as an airport now with credentials. So you can imagine trying to screen truck drivers, yeah, vendors coming in. And as Jeff mentioned, on the cybersecurity side, we've spent a lot of money hardening our computer infrastructure to prevent it. But if ours runs off the rail, it's not as detrimental as what Jeff was saying in some of these other facilities, wastewater treatment facilities. We still operate in a mode and run through drills that if we don't have communications, if we don't have the internet, can we keep functioning in that regard? So it's a redundancy of that. But yeah, we've certainly stepped up over the last several years and protected ourselves from ransomware, from hacking, those type of things that are more disruptive as they are to being absolutely disabilitating to us, as well as our tenants as well on the bulk handling side, liquid bulk handling side as well.
Now, where the port really, I guess, excels is in bulk and break,
sure,
things
absolutely,
like grain, right?
Grain, oil, sugar.
But in, and I guess that's very important in the mix, but cargo, the giant ports that you see are the ones that hold the containers,
absolutely,
right?
Yes. That, you know, that's where a lot of America's usable, touchable goods come through. Talked to a guy not too long ago, I think it was one of these research institutes, that one-third of all boxes coming into the United States are tied to the housing industry. It's hard,
wow,
to believe. Mattresses, washers, dryers, flooring, electronics that you put in your houses, those type of things. So, you know, that's a big part and big segment of the economy. And
yeah,
to keep those boxes moving, as we found out, and when they slow down and get congested like they are now, you don't have toys on the shelves for the kids at Christmas. I mean, it's a mess right now, and it's going to take a while for it to sort out.
Yeah. Speaking of usable, touchable things in the home, Jeff, one of the things Stevenson is working on is like showing people how to defend their homes against cyber attacks. And there's even a model house here in Baton Rouge that y'all have helped set up to show people how those smart kitchens and refrigerators can actually work against them.
Absolutely. We just literally yesterday had an open house, and it continues today, on our Internet of Things living lab. And why do we call it a living lab as opposed to just a house? Well, because we're doing experiments. So you don't necessarily do experiments in your house most of the time.
So it'll be a research thing for y'all as well.
Absolutely. This is being funded by the Air Force, and the Air Force wants to know how can we secure our employees when they work from home. Now, COVID has made that sort of a standard operating procedure now. And they're also interested in knowing how to take advantage of devices that talk to each other that you don't necessarily need to know or don't necessarily understand that phenomenology if you're just a common user. So what we try to do is we try to educate people on using this facility to how they integrate and how do they securely integrate with their technology. So we're buying devices that we don't even know are connected. I just saw an alarm clock from Amazon the other day that actually has a camera. Now think about that for a second.
Wait, the alarm clock has a camera.
And where is it sitting?
Right next to your bed.
And guess who's going to be on Pornhub next week?
Oh.
That's right. That's
just horrible.
Isn't it? And
yes,
you didn't even know it was there. And it also has a microphone.
Wow.
Literally. This is where we are. This is the world in which we live. I just had a client not too long ago from one of the casinos out in Vegas that was exploited through the thermometer in the aquarium in the lobby.
In the lobby of a hotel?
A thermometer.
Or a casino. Whatever.
A thermometer in the aquarium in a lobby of a casino.
And I guess the institutions, I mean, the commercial facilities don't know that these things are there, do they? Are they in on the...
And that's part of the problem, right? They
right?
should be, but you'd think they would be. And one of the very first questions I ask when I walk into a situation where we're going to actually do a risk assessment on a client is like, show me your data flow diagram. And I get the confused look in the puppy.
Like a what?
Like, what?
What is a data
Who,
flow
what,
diagram?
Where? So our stuff's in the cloud. Where's the cloud? Oh, what's in a cloud? I was like, well, that's not the answer. The answer
right.
is knowing how your data moves from creation to disposal and the life cycle of that data, and then controlling it as best you can. And then, you know, of course, securing it. And that's what we do for a living. We help people understand that. And this particular device, this Internet of Things Living Lab, it's more about your daily use of things. And some of, you know, we did a study for the Air Force actually. When was the busiest time in your house from an electromagnetic perspective? When's the action really occurring? Right, so what would you think? Most people think around dinner time. You know, kids are home from school, they're all on their computers, your TVs are going, your stoves are going. And it's actually around 3 in the morning. And that's because when your devices start talking to themselves. Your Fire Stick start downloading, your Alexa starts updating, all your devices that you don't even know are communicating or riding across your network are talking to each other.
This is getting creepy.
I just don't know if my washing machine needs to talk to my refrigerator.
Absolutely. You know? Right? We just had a woman get hacked. She got hacked through her teapot. I didn't even know they made smart teapots.
It's unbelievable.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Stephanie Regal. I'm talking to Jeff Moulton of Stevenson Technologies Corporation and Jay Hardiman of the Port of Greater Baton Rouge. Jay. So while we're talking about this very futuristic technology that is right here and changing the way we think, shipping is one of the oldest industries in the whole world. And what is the state of the shipping, the global shipping industry right now? Never mind the supply chain disruptions, but I mean, overall, is it healthy? Is it growing? Is it losing market share?
I think from a port's perspective, a land size perspective, I think it could be no better time than to be in the port business, the port industry. I mean, we're becoming much more dependent. We're pushing exports out, bringing imports in. And on the shipping side, what you're seeing is a lot of shifting over to more green fuels and mm-hmm. probably ties into what Jeff's talking about. You know, they have autonomous tankers now that traverse the oceans with just a very few people on them. Deep draft vessels as they get closer to port, put a crew on them to bring them in, much like autonomous automobiles. So you're seeing a lot of that type of automation in shipping. And then you get back to the nuts and bolts, the simple fact that we're deepening the Mississippi River so you can bring in bigger ships mm-hmm. to handle more cargo. So you get back to some of the real rudimentary deeper docks, bigger docks, stronger docks, deeper yeah. rivers, and you see that all across the country with deepening projects.
And they are deepening at the mouth of the river, is that not correct?
Right, Jeff, if you're going to deepen a channel, you got to start at the drainage end of it. So they're starting at the mouth and working their way up.
And are they going to get as far as Baton Rouge?
Yes, they will. We'll be able to take 50-foot draft ships. We're a little bit advantage up there. We have such a big stage fluctuation in Baton Rouge. Right mm-hmm. now, river's at about 10, goes up to 42. At times, or
yeah.
if 45
yeah.
gets to be a little tricky here in Baton Rouge. So,
right.
you know, so we have a little bit more so freeboard to play with as far as establishing and holding that draft, not so much as having to deepen or dig the bottom out much deeper than what it already is. So, yeah, they will be here, and I would imagine in the next year, 18 months, we'll be handling ships approaching 50 feet in draft.
If I have to worry about somebody's cyber attack on a tea kettle or a dialysis machine, I hate to think of what they would do with a ship
full of
containers. Terrifying.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
And it's happening every day, too. Right now it's more and more. Right? What used to be separated by what we call an air gap is the information technology systems that basically run your businesses, mm-hmm. business processes, with the operational technology system, which run the devices like the last incident with the oil, and now we're working with liquid natural gas, with the pipeline, the Colonial Pipeline. Those OT systems now are actually taking advantage of IT systems and are all in one, which makes them extremely vulnerable. It used
OT
to be separate.
OT systems and IT systems, right. It was
IT systems, business processing, OT systems actually run the actual devices,
mm-hmm.
and they are now being used on one network, which is becoming very problematic, and that's going to really have a cascading effect across the country's critical infrastructure.
And OT people aren't really trained in IT,
they
don't think that way, right?
Absolutely true. The mm-hmm. OT people can hardly spell IT.
So it's going to require like retraining people.
At least, if nothing else, from an awareness perspective. And to be honest with you, most of the people now that are in the line of work are cognizant of the threats that are posed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a being cognizant and being able to do something about it are two different things.
Sure, sure. And speaking of personnel, how we have workforce shortages in every industry, how is it at the port?
At times, you better believe it, forklift drivers, at times, truck drivers. But most of our trucking, Stephanie's regional trucking field from farm to the port to the grain elevator. Same thing on the wood pellet side. You know, pellets coming out of Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, rail delivery, truck delivery, which is not long-haul truckers. These are guys that drive during the day and get to go home at night. So it's a much more stable type workforce. But at times on kind of the day labor side, there are crunches, really are.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Now, Jeff, we have to talk about the data condom, which you brought me as a favor for being here today. And it looks just like a little USB drive, really.
Very much like a
thumb drive, sort of?
Yep, that is a data blocker.
Okay.
I like to call it data condoms, but I want everyone in the country to start practicing safe charging. Right?
Safe charging.
By using that data condom, putting that over your USB device on whatever you charge with your phone or your computer, it will actually stop the data from moving. People don't realize that USB port is a data transfer port. It is not just a power outlet, right? It's meant and it's always been designed to transfer data. So this actually stops it. It's about $1.15. So for $1.15, that's one of the things that you can do.
So like my husband always tells me not to plug in at the airport.
Do not.
But you're saying anywhere.
Anywhere. Anywhere you can put your USB charger, that blocker will actually stop it from actually transferring. I like to keep things simple. Most of the people that I deal with, and not only in the academic circles, but at least to some degree in the residential areas and the things that we're doing at the Internet of Things Living Lab right now, are just very, very, very basic stuff. You don't have to be a PhD electrical engineer to figure this stuff out. You know, I call it low-tech solutions in a high-tech world.
Wow.
Right? How do you protect yourself? It's not going to go away. The cyber problem is not going away. It's just like the flu. It's never going to leave, right? You know, we have to learn to live with it. That's the way we approach everything that we do from a security perspective, with that going-in assumption.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like COVID. It's going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, you got to learn to live with it, right? It's just like brushing your teeth every day. I brush my teeth 3 times a day. Doesn't mean I don't get cavities, right? But you control what you can,
uh-huh.
Right? So then I give one piece of advice to everybody. When they go to bed at night, take a timer and turn your Wi-Fi off. You can't get hacked if you're not connected. So that takes that 30% of your exposure in life out. Just turn it off. You don't use it
your
when you're sleeping.
House?
Anyway. If you can, do it.
Wow. Do you?
I unplug my cable modem. Separates me from the world right there for all practical purposes. You know,
wow.
Cable modem, Wi-Fi, router, all go down.
Very low-tech solution.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
The other thing we do when we travel, we have the battery packs. We charge those and then plug our phones into those. So
that's
we're not
smart.
Going into any type of port or charger,
yeah.
You know, just another area of trying to protect yourself. You know, just like Jeff says, you can hardly do enough, but the simple things work.
I want to go back before we run out of time, Jay, to one thing you mentioned about the containers and sending them back to New Orleans, because New Orleans is a big container port. We're a cargo port, bulk
right.
cargo port, so... What are y'all doing to?
Yeah, a lot of the plants here, both on the chemical side, dry chemicals, pellets, plastic rosins, export those. Due to low natural gas prices in the United States, there's a huge market to shove those out into the world. So a lot of empty containers, tremendous amount of empty containers, end up in Memphis. That's where they're unloaded to be distributed into the heartland. And so we started a program where we bring those down with a company called Secor out of Memphis, bring the empties down. This area is really deficient of empty containers. They go out to our regional shippers, get loaded, brought back to the port of Baton Rouge. Once they bring them down, we bring them down via water in a barge.
Wow.
They come down empty, they get loaded back in the barge to New Orleans, taken off at New Orleans, and then onto the ship for export. So you're removing the truck miles out of Memphis and then down to New Orleans. And so that business is steadily growing.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some good growth. We moved probably 22,000 boxes a year.
Wow.
In that.
That's great.
And it's continuing. And I think as the shippers become more receptive to it, the utilization of it will grow.
So, great.
You know, the U.S. in general has very underutilized waterways for cargo movements.
Jeff, I want before we run out of time, I need to ask you about the Stellar Corporation, because we haven't even talked about the work you're doing in outer space.
Right.
Well, that's really cool, too.
There's a reason for that. We're not allowed to talk about it.
Give us the one-minute version.
I will give you the one-minute version. So we're basically doing the same thing we're doing on the terrestrial planet here up in space. We're protecting the satellites themselves. We're protecting the base stations on Earth that actually talk to the satellites. and then the waveforms or the data links that connect it to.
And are there a lot of companies doing this? I mean, do you work, do you compete with other companies for this work? Is everybody on the same team trying to help the federal government keep us all safe? Or
I wish Nirvana was real, but it's not. So, yes, we do compete with a lot of folks. It's really hard, and you talked about labor shortage a while ago, it's really hard to find real, true cyber talent.
Sure.
It's really even more difficult to find cyber talent that can get clearances and then also spell space. It is a very, very small pool of labor to pull from. Ironically, I'm competing with Elon Musk. I'm competing with Richard Branson, Lockheed Martin, Boeing. Fortunately, we offer enough competitive package to attract some really good talent. We have folks here down in Baton Rouge that work in the space side of the business. We have a big operation in Colorado Springs. We have an operation in Huntsville, Alabama, which is becoming a very quick space center of gravity. So I don't want to go too much into the details.
That's okay. Just enough to keep us very much interested. Well, Jeff Moulton and Jay Hardiman, it's been so fascinating to have y'all here on the show today. You both are in such important fields, keeping us safe and keeping our economy humming. So thank you all so much for joining me on Out to Lunch and sharing your stories.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My guests today on Out to Lunch have been Jeff Moulton of Stevenson Technologies Corporation and Jay Hardiman of the Port of Greater Baton Rouge. We edited this show to fit into the time slot here on WRKF. You can hear our unedited conversation and find out more about Stevenson Technologies Corporation and the Port of Greater Baton Rouge by listening to the Out to Lunch Baton Rouge podcast. You can find and subscribe to the Out to Lunch Baton Rouge podcast anywhere you get podcasts and on our website, it's batonrouge.la. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on itsbatonrouge.la and on our Out to Lunch Baton Rouge social media. Photos are taken by Eric Otts, and you can find more of Eric's photos on Instagram at @acreaux, that's A-C-R-E-A-U-X. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsbatonrouge.la and WRKF 89.3 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Today's show was engineered by J.T. O'Neill. Our associate producer is Peter Rusciuti. Our Baton Rouge business consultants are Charlie D'Agostino and Ann Edelman. I'm Stephanie Regal. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you around the table at Mansur's again next week for more business Baton Rouge style on Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch Baton Rouge is recorded live over lunch at Mansur's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Mansur's is open for lunch daily, 11 to 2, for dinner nightly, and for brunch on Saturdays and Sundays. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Shorten Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com.